Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's the 7th of November 2017. I'm taking my constitutional along the Staffordshire and Worcestershire Canal. Shortly I'll branch off onto the Birmingham Mainline Canal, which will get me to Wolverhampton City Centre, whereupon I shall sit down and take coffee and watch the world go by. In fact, today's topic is watching the world go by. W.H. Davis, the Supertramp poet, came up with a wonderful line. Time to stop and stare. That's the line. Time to stop and stare. And it's pretty clear that W.H. Davis valued that thing, that very thing. I think he's right. We should value it. It has many of the benefits of more formal contemplation and possibly some benefits that we're not going to get by having a timetabled, rigorous, you might say, approach to something like sitting meditation. It's rather more fluid, rather more open, rather less concerned with discipline and training and cultivation. Time to stop and stare. Now obviously this is about organising one's time and making sure that there's some spacious bits in one's daily routines, and work schedules and so forth. And it's about making sure you've got lumps of time where you can meander, where you can let things happen, and where the slight anxiety that attaches to scheduling, or in some cases the strong anxiety that attaches to scheduling, is just dropped. Now these days we hear a lot about mindfulness and so forth, and it's become a bit of a buzzword. And it's the hot ticket in mental health in the UK, I think, at the moment. And what that is, it's basically a Buddhist idea that's being pared down and putting it charitably, shorn of the trappings of the formal religion, which is its home base. So we actually do get a lot of debates about this. I know several influential and authoritative people in the fields of Buddhism, Hinduism, meditation, who are a bit unhappy about this category, spiritual but not religious, which is, if you want to find out about that, I suppose Sam Harris is somebody who's expanded on that idea and fleshed it out. But I mean, personally, I'm not a fan, probably for different reasons from my religionist friends, or from the opponents of something like Sam Harris's position. I suppose what I see is a commodification. It's become a product, and it's been sold much as you would sell any other product, in other words, on the back of some hype and advertising, and the whole kind of Bernays phenomenon of manufacturing discontent and then promising the palliative. It seems to me that there is a kind of a denaturing that takes place once the crassness of commodity marketing gets hold of anything of this type. Now, time to stop and stare. It's rather more difficult to commodify than something like mindfulness. But it already sounds like a brand. Time to stop and stare doesn't have a brand ring about it. It's something that we've dissociated from regimes and regimes of self-improvement and so forth, or even regimes of self-care. It's just there in its quiddity. Time to stop and stare. This reminds me not only of W.H. Davis, the Anglo-Welsh poet, who you often imagine leaning on a gate and looking over a vista in South Wales, over rolling hills and fields and woods, twisty rivers, but also of the great Dervish paintings of the Sung and the Yuan dynasties, whereby you get these vast silk surfaces painted with basically just ink, one ink, but an ink that's allows us to avail ourselves of almost an infinity of shades and gradations. And in this painting there's a great deal of spontaneity in the brushwork, kind of a letting be in the flow of the ink, but it's done with such acquaintance with the flow patterns of nature and of existence that these paintings almost paint themselves. But a common theme in these paintings, as you probably know, is these vast landscapes of Puy-type mountains, you know, columns of mountain with trees up the side, very steep, and little pagodas wherever you can build one, halfway up and so forth, and great clouds of mist in the valleys. And if you look closely, you can very often see some tiny, tiny figures, a couple of tiny figures, either sitting on a rock and just staring out over the vista, or just working their way up the mountain. But they are tiny in the scale of the whole composition. You get a 6-foot canvas and a figure is half an inch tall. And there is the whole picture of the Dervish sage in these paintings, of someone who does take time to stop and stare and values it as probably the highest value. And of course the mode of life that goes with that is wandering about in the mountains. Maybe painting, maybe composing poems, maybe just sitting when you feel like it. Not because your alarm clock's gone off to tell you it's sitting time, or you've had a little reminder on your iPhone, but because it just feels right to sit and to stare and to just let yourself merge into the landscape and let the landscape merge into you in a completely natural and easeful way. This is something that's very difficult to reduce to algorithms and schedules and timetables and improvement programs or anything bureaucratic like that. It flows out of the flow of life itself, the flow of existence itself. And certainly what I find with that approach to things is once you have a little experiment with it and in a sense you're quietly inviting that, or allowing yourself to have an orientation towards that flow of things, that you do start to realise that yes, this is valuable and it has great benefits, but it's almost we don't engage in it for the benefit as such, but for its own sake. Nevertheless, there are benefits. what appeals to me about that on that secondary level of benefit is how there's a kind of a settling of whatever it is that one is engaged with and busy with and maybe anxious about. Oh, we live in turbulent times, and if we're active people in the world, there's always lots to think about, lots to plan, lots to analyse, lots of strategies to be made and all this kind of stuff. And if there's never any rest from that, there's never any quiet perspective on all of that, those aspects of our lives, those things can crush a person. And I see it on a daily basis, probably. If you take time to stop and stare, that stuff kind of settles and you get a different perspective on it. You might even find that you can kind of have a chuckle about it. And realise that in the scheme of things, it's a mote in the great vast universe, and you needn't worry. And that also, I would say, refreshes one as well when it comes to, you might say, going back into the fray, having to get on with the tasks. Now, personally, I'm in the position of being one of Her Majesty's pensioners, and there is a small demand for my attention, which people are willing to pay me for. And I don't really have to sort of worry about getting by or anything like that at the moment, until the economy collapses and we're all in a Mad Max situation. So for myself, if the things that I take on, the turbulences that I decide to engage with, are my own decision that I will engage with this turbulence. It's usually, for me, decisions like that are made in conjunction with other people. My loan projects confine themselves to artistic and philosophical things, and I've got those too. But when it comes to the turbulence of the world, I am, believe it or not, a bit of a group player or a team player, you might say. It seems strange, and I've had to kind of learn it. But yeah, that's where I'm at with that. I wouldn't want to be engaging in any of these things without time to stop and stare. Really is a priority for me. And I do have a resonance with the devish thing of getting into the mountains and the quiet places and the isolated places, and the places where you can see the sky and the weather, and where there's water and rock and trees. Sea is good too for this kind of stuff. But I can work it here in the industry, in this tiny little figure embedded in this industrial archaeology of these remnants of the great industrial revolution of the late 18th and early 19th century. That works for me too. I can do it in my room. I can do it with my eyes closed in the space behind my eyes, in the mountainous wilderness behind my eyes, just as easily as sitting on the rock on the side of Cader Idris, something like that. So, what am I saying here? Well, I recommend it. Time to stop and stare. Time to avail yourself of that wonderful potential of human life for encountering its own depths, its own origins, its own isness, its own beatitude, its own sublimity, its own beauty. Without too much fuss, without the anxiety of schedules and regimes. And we do hear a lot these days about activity has been the key to a healthful old age. And a lot of this comes from the government because they're shitting themselves about how much it's going to cost. As people live longer, and there's more of them living longer when the population in general is ageing. And when we're finding people having 10 years of life in a state where they need a lot of expensive medical care, as opposed to marching right the way up to the brink of death in good nick and then keeling over. I mean, this stuff, from what I can see, not only would bankrupt our health services, but bankrupt the economy, almost. It's quite serious. Yeah. And mindfulness is in some, from some quarters, is coming up on the back of that anxiety. And I think certain groups, certainly in the UK, and I dare say it's happening across the board in the so-called first world or developed world, wherever. But of course, once it's involved with these governmental ideas, these governmental initiatives, it also becomes involved with corporations, with the corporate state. So we need to realise that the modern state in Europe and America and so forth is an enmeshment of corporate power and state power. And of course, corporate power is, in its own way, enmeshed with that entire enterprise of manufacturing dissatisfaction in order to sell commodities through the nefarious manipulations of Bernays-style advertising. So this is how the idea that spiritual disciplines can address this huge social demographic problem really falls on the way in which the corporate state denatures anything of that type automatically. Basically, it gets mixed up in the fibbing of advertising. And as you, if you've listened to these podcasts, you'll know that I regard yoga, for instance, as having deep countercultural roots, and recognising this is essential. And also guards us against, as yoga people, these kind of denaturing processes. Well, that actually are coming from several directions. And of course, these Taoist hermits that I was talking about, they again are countercultural figures. Put it crudely, they're dropouts who just don't want to live the bureaucratic life and think that human life is too amazing not to avail oneself of its extraordinary potentials, and for whom taking time to stop and stare is actually essential. So again, I suppose what I'm doing is my thing of recommending something. You don't have to take any notice. Maybe it's a quirk of my personality that I like to do that. And maybe you should only take what I've said here in that spirit. But there you go, I'm doing it. If you turned on and listened, I suppose you may have already had an inclination to at least listen. Anyway, thanks for listening. And reiterating, it's a great thing to take time to stop and stare and give that a great priority in your life. Addendum. Here is the poem that I alluded to, and actually slightly misquoted, by W.H. Davis. The title is Leisure. What is this life, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare? No time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep and cows. Now time to see when woods we pass, where squirrels hide their nuts in grass. Now time to see in broad daylight, streams full of stars like skies at night. Now time to turn at beauty's glance and watch her feet, how they can dance. Now time to wait till her mouth can enrich that smile her eyes began. A poor life this, if full of care, we have no time to stand and stare.